Thanks for clicking play on the Eastlake Tri-Cities Talks podcast. If you're new to this, we're trying to be the best church option for people in the Tri-Cities who aren't typically into church. We hope today's talk inspires you to take next steps in doing life in the way Jesus modeled and taught. If you're ever interested in being a part of one of our in-person gatherings, they take place every Sunday at the Uptown Theater in Richland. Check the website for current times. And regardless of what you look like, who you voted for, or where your tattoos are, we'd love to have you. But for now, here's our most recent talk.
Good morning, Eastlake. My name is Anna Plemons. I am not Brent Johnson, the teaching pastor here. So while you like recalibrate your disappointment, it's dark, so I can't see you. So it's fine. You can be sad for a second. Also, my voice is maybe or maybe not going to join us today. So we'll see how this goes. I apologize ahead of time for how I sound, but I'm so happy to be here with you. I'm so happy that you're here and that we get to spend a little time together this morning. If it's your first time, we're especially glad you're here. And like I said, I'm not the regular guy, so we hope that you'll plan for a second date no matter how this goes. So we just finished a two-week series called Beyond Getting Even, and it was really useful for us to think about how we want to respond when we are hurt. And so today I wanted to just slightly extend and pivot a little bit on that conversation and talk a little bit about how we respond to others when they are hurting. And so that's what we're going to be up to this morning. And I thought it might be useful to lead in with the story. I do have permission to tell the story in case you start wondering as we're going along. Also, I forgot to tell the first service that at my house we laugh about stuff that I know is not funny. So I hope that's okay with you. That's another thing to know about the story. For the story, you'll need to know that our son Moses was adopted. He was born in Ethiopia. He was adopted when he was about 2. And the most important thing to know that you want to keep track of is that this story happened in October, because that detail is going to be important in a minute. So I'm going to move this little business onto the counter. All right. So our kids are maybe like 6, 4, and 2, and I'm home alone, and Jason's working late, so I got dinner duty. You know we were having mac and cheese. I didn't need to tell you that. And we're at the table, and so we're sitting there, and Mo kind of out of the blues asks, he's like, can we find out where my birth father is buried? And so when we had decided to adopt, kind of between that point of, okay, your paperwork's in and now you're waiting, and it's for the, I don't know if we have other adoptive parents in the room, but it's such a powerless place, right? So I spent all of that energy like reading every possible book. So is there a book about multiracial families? Read it. Is there a book about adoption? Read it. Trauma parenting? Read it. Like, this is how I was coping with kind of the powerlessness of applications in, there's no baby at your house yet. And so read a lot. So I am bringing to this conversation all of my mom books, right? So my kid says to me, like, can we find out where my birth dad is buried? And so I was like, oh, I'm showing up for this moment. So I was like, but I also really believe in honesty, right? So, and I don't actually know much about like how burial works in rural Ethiopia. So I was like, oh, buddy, like, I don't actually know. I didn't find out that detail, but like, I'm here for you. I'm like super invested in keeping this conversation open, right? So I'm like, I don't know, but like, just keep talking. Like, let me hear from your heart. Like, what are you trying to tell me right now, right? And he's like, when we go, can we bring shovels? No. But like open, but I like keep talking and like, I'm here to hear your heart, you know? So I was like, oh no, we definitely, but like, why though? Like, here, let me hear from you. I was thinking we could dig them up. But still openness, right? So I got like all the adoptive mom books and the trauma mom books. And now I'm also just the like humans who aren't like psychopaths books, right? So I'm like, you know, we got to talk about the fact that like, that's not a thing we do. I was like, we are definitely not going to dig up your birth father. We don't dig up bones. He's like, we do that for the dinosaurs. And I was like, that's a fair point. And I am talking to a four-year-old. And if you've known a four-year-old, they are dino experts, right? Like, I saw this meme one time that it was like dino knowledge, and it peaks at 4, and then like a PhD in paleontology, like you might like climb your way back up, right? So like, four-year-olds know about dinosaurs. He's like, we do dig up bones. And I was like, yeah, okay, no, but still really like wanting to hear his heart on this matter. So I was like, okay, yeah, no, we're definitely not going to do that. Like, that's hard pass on digging up humans. But I was like, but can you tell me, you know, like why you feel like I value that you want to be close to the bones of your, like, I'm really like deep in all the mom books in this moment. And I'm like, can you tell me why you want to do that? And he's like, I was thinking we could bring them home, put some lights on them, make them glow up, decorate our house. And I was like, it's October. It's October. Our Halloween decorations are wholly insufficient. I'm talking to a four-year-old. This is not a hurting person. This is a person that's like, it's not very cool looking around here. And just cataloging, like, do we know any dead people, right? So that's a story about me showing up for a person who wasn't hurting, which is how we can start our conversation today about how we show up for people who are hurting. So that one's just for fun. It's one of my favorites. I love talking about early childhood and all of my, like, over-eager missteps of parenting. This month, so it's April still, and this marks the 30-year anniversary of the Rwandan genocide. I don't know how familiar you are with that. And so I had a couple questions that I wanted to share with us today that kind of come out of an experience of my husband and I getting to go travel to Rwanda and talk to some reconciliation workers there. But before we kind of jump into that, I did want to say I felt a little worried. Whenever we're talking about like places or contexts that maybe feel far away for some of us, like we don't have a lot of experience with that, I think it's really easy to distance ourselves, right? Like, how could they do that? How could that happen? Like, that would never happen here. And so I would propose to us this morning that when we're talking about any kind of human suffering or places where humans have treated each other terribly, that we're really talking about the human condition. So there might be differences in scale between that experience and our own, but I would propose that there are no differences in kind, right? That we are all at some level capable of terrible violence, and that we are all hopefully by the grace of God and in his power also capable of joining with folks who are doing things like reconciliation, right? That we are talking about the human experience, and even if it isn't our version of the human experience, it's something that we can connect to and we can see ourselves both in the darkness and in the light of it. So 30 years ago, Rwandan genocide, and there had been some colonization there, and I'm not a history professor, and that's not what you came for, so that's fine, but we do kind of need to know. So you have the Hutus that are in power at that point, and you have Tutsis, all Rwandans, right? But this government-sanctioned movement begins to kill Tutsis. And so what's really incredible about what happened in Rwanda is that in the end, a lot of that violence was perpetrated neighbor against neighbor, right? And so you have these local governments that incited people to kill their neighbors. And you think, like, that's incredible. I mean, and then once the violence stopped, where do you go from there, right? It wasn't like there was this external thing that came in and wreaked havoc on the neighborhood. Like, this tragedy was imposed from one person to another. And so, how does a neighborhood, how does a town recover from something like that? So my husband Jason and I, we had the chance to go to Rwanda in 2011 and spend some time with reconciliation workers there. And these reconciliation workers, they are Rwandans, and they are actively facilitating people being reconciled to each other in these like deeply tragic and deeply personal situations. Also, if you kind of follow the news, I sometimes hear these efforts like by the Rwandan government that they'll kind of be labeled as reconciliation, but really that's more just sort of like a forced kind of brokering of peace. Also important, but it's kind of those things like, hey, we're not going to talk about ethnicity anymore. We're not going to do these kind of things. The government did and is doing some things to kind of keep things tamped down. But what these reconciliation workers are doing as Christians in Rwanda are really trying to help people like heal, truly heal, and come back into relationship with each other. So when I think about places where you're like, what would the gospel look like? Like when we talk about this idea that what the big idea of the Bible, right? That like God came near to like heal broken things and to come back into relationship with humans. You're like, what would that look like on the planet? Rwanda, I think, honestly, when we think about this idea of reconciliation and what people were able, the places people were able to get to with each other, it feels to me like, oh, that's it. That's what the gospel looks like in action. So I want to tell you a story about Pascal and Narcisse. So we're there and we're having this really amazing time. And the Pascal and Narcisse were our primary kind of hosts while we were there. And they're just lovely, lovely gentlemen. And they're very like sweet and kind to us and very attentive to us. And also very sweet and kind and very attentive to each other. So you can imagine kind of the brain breakage that was happening in my mind as they start telling us their story. So Narcisse murdered Pascal's pregnant wife during the genocide. right? And they came to a place through this process of becoming reconciled to each other, and to the extent that Pascal invited Narcisse to his wedding when he got married to his second wife, right? So you're like, that's wild, right? That is absolutely, like, that can only be a story of something that God could do, but really, how did they get there? How did that get done? And I do want to say, before I keep moving, I know Brent said something similar in the last series, so I am not a counselor. I'm not a trained reconciliation worker, right? Like, I'm really not qualified to lead us through any kind of those kinds of processes, or really to even have a conversation with a small child, as was already noted. But I think that there's still something here for us, and there's questions that I hope that we can ask ourselves as we think about what we might learn together from this. So the big question, the big Eastlake question, the question we're always asking ourselves, and I love it, is this idea of how can we live in the way of Jesus in this place and in this time? Like, what would that look like right now? And so the questions that I have for us today as we think about how we show up for people who are hurting, I think they nest pretty well inside the big Eastlake question. So when Jason and I were meeting with reconciliation workers in Rwanda, they walked us through the process of like how they facilitate reconciliation. And so they're like, you know, this, step one, step two. And it was really interesting and actually pretty shocking to me when that step one, they said that really what needs to happen as step one for moving to reconciliation in such like completely desperate and tragic circumstances is that they have to make space for people to name God as responsible for their suffering. Right? So I was like, what? Right? And excuse me, sorry for coughing on you. It happened in first service too. Terribly sorry. So they have to make space for people to name God as the kind of the author of their suffering. And in this case, in the story of Rwanda, they would make space for people to say God is Interahamwe. And so if you know, so Interahamwe is, that's the name of these militias who are going around killing, you know, getting people to kill their neighbors. And so that's a really big thing to say. That's a really big thing to say. And then as we were there learning more about the genocide and kind of how it played out, we learned that there were actually some kind of mini genocides that happened in the years leading up to it. And that in those situations, in those situations, that churches would be sanctuary sites, right? So if people could make it to a church, they would be safe. So really, there was this plan that we really trained people to go to churches and seek safety there. So then in 1994, when we have the big genocide, where, I mean, nearly close to a million Rwandans were murdered by their neighbors over the course of about 100 days, what happened is these churches became huge sites of genocide. Right? And then now, by the time we got there in 2011, they had become memorials, rightly, because they're places where lots of people lost their lives. And in the ways that the Rwandans had decided to set up these memorials, they left like bloodied clothing like hanging over the rafters or hanging over the pews. And then the bones had been cleaned and organized by type, and they're in the back of these churches. And so you're standing inside a church surrounded by bloodied clothes and cleaned bones, and you're like, okay, it feels like a big thing to say, but I see why these reconciliation workers needed to let people start here, right? To move through this process. And so I think that's interesting for us to think about. And I think when we look in the Bible, what we see and what the reconciliation workers knew, because they were, I think, looking to their Bibles as they were planning out this reconciliation process, is what they could see is that God is big enough for our accusations of him. We see evidence of that throughout the Bible, but especially in the Psalms. So Psalm 13, 1 through 2. How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemies triumph over me? Psalm 22, 1 through 2. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me? So far from my cries of anguish. My God, I cry out to you by day, but you do not answer. By night, but I find no rest. And Psalm 88, 6 through 7. You have put me in the lowest pit, in the darkest depths. Your wrath lies heavily on me. You have overwhelmed me with all your waves. So those are big things to say to God. Those are big things to say about God. But I think God makes space for our accusations of him because he knows us. He knows us. And he knows that we need to get those heavy, isolating thoughts into the sunlight so that we can see them better, so that we can recognize the untruth in them and eventually set them down to make room for healing in the absolute truth of God's love and care for us. But that's a process that we have to go through, right? Sometimes we got to get the inside stuff on the outside where we can see it better. And I think God makes space for us to do that. But I think the question is, do we make space for each other to do that? And I hope that you have had the experience of being on the receiving end of that type of care. I would imagine, based on my own lived experience and perhaps your own as well, that this is something we could get a little better at, right? A quick, tiny, kind of unimportant, but important to me, maybe, story from my own life. Earlier this year, I found myself, I think, in what is probably a pretty typical midlife space that other folks might be able to relate to, some kind of stressors and big shifts kind of happening in our little immediate family, some stressors and some kind of significant shifts happening in our extended family, feeling really stressed, a lot of stress at work, and just realizing that I could not connect to joy, right? Like I would be in a situation and I'd be like, cognitively, I know this is joyful, which you already know you're in trouble if you're having thoughts like, cognitively, I can recognize that the situation is joyful. Like something's up, something's amiss, something's out of alignment. And that was absolutely my circumstance earlier this year. And of course, that's not a place I wanted to stay in. Of course, that's not a place that I think God had for me to stay in. And so I was like, just trying to kind of work it out. And I had approached somebody who I thought would kind of show up for me in that space, you know, and so I was like, hey, I'm kind of feeling this, and like, I cannot experience joy. And then this person said to me, and I'm guessing probably over the course of your life, you've had one or two of these as well, they're like, the joy of the Lord is always available. I was like, yeah, no, oh, yeah, oh, do you guys do the yeah, no, yeah, no, and yeah, and so it didn't feel terribly helpful, and I absolutely stopped talking, right? I was like, okay, yeah, no, and just kind of walk my way backwards out of that situation. And so I hope that hasn't happened to you. I'm guessing it probably has. And so when we were in Rwanda, on one of the days that we were there, we got to go visit this really lovely place. It was so lovely and it was so peaceful. And you go into this gate and it's just like well manicured and it's just really lovely. And I'm like, what is this place? So the name of this place was Speak, I'm Listening. And it actually was the center for women, to support women, you know, post-genocide, who had experienced, I mean, truly inexplicable harm, right? So it was a place for physical healing, it was a place for emotional healing, it was a place for economic development. So there's all these things that are happening in this space, and it was so interesting to me, so very, very interesting to me, that you could have called it a lot of things, but what they decided to name the place was Speak, I'm Listening, right? Because this idea that the invitation to speak and the promise to listen was so core to anything that was going to be happening there, right? So I just really love that. So here is my question for us. How can we make space for each other to share thoughts and feelings about God that need to be worked through on the road to healing and wholeness? How can we make that kind of space for each other? I didn't bring the answers. I should tell you that straight up. I brought you three questions and a couple stories, and then you're on your own. All right, so I do feel a little worried about putting a question like that out there, like, because I already assured you I'm not a counselor. I know we're not a church full of counselors, and so I don't know if we're really even qualified to do this kind of work, but I really want to invite us to think about, I do think we can be better listeners. I think we can get a little better at listening, and I think we can just know in our hearts that, like, God doesn't need to be defended. He doesn't need us to paper over really big hurts, that he can handle it, right? We see that in the Psalms, that he's willing to hear us out so that we can listen to others as they're trying to work through those kinds of things. And I think it's important, like as I was trying to read up and study a little bit about this and study about lament and whatever, and I think we're not going to leave each other here, right? Even in my talking to that person, clearly I believe I was hopeful that that wasn't the place I was going to stay in, right? So I don't think this isn't complaining, and this is like just get in the stuff that's stuck on the outside. So I think we can do this for each other, and I think we can practice and get better at it. Okay, so the second question, it's actually two, that I have for us stems from an experience for Rwanda, and it's actually not my story. It's not actually my story, but I have the microphone, so I'm going to tell it to you. So we're in Rwanda, and we're meeting with these reconciliation workers, and one day we traveled kind of pretty far out into the countryside, and then a lot of people had traveled from a bunch of different locations to kind of meet in this space so we could hear about their work. So we're sitting in a circle, there's probably about 25 people, so a big-ish circle, and we're just listening, and we're hearing about this incredible work, and it's just absolutely like stretching my brain to the ends of what's possible. And at one point, they asked if any of the visitors, you know, wanted to respond or had anything that they wanted to share. So my husband, Jason, stands up, and from this super earnest, very real place, he just says to this group of people, on behalf of myself, my family, my church, and my nation, I just really want to say that I'm sorry for what happened here, and I'm sorry for our part in it. Right? And you're like, is that useful? Like, what's he doing? You know, and really, 1994, Jason Plemons was a junior in high school. Like, what could he have done? Did he even know what was going on at that point? And so here we are, 17 years later. What's the point of saying something like that? And so I think when Jason made that statement in this circle of reconciliation workers in Rwanda, what he's really saying is, I know we are connected and that I have benefited from the systems that at least partially explain how this genocide happened and why the international community stood by silently. I see that that silence deeply hurt you, and I'm also grieved by it. I think that's what he was really saying, right? So you think like, okay, what's the point of that? Here's where it gets wild. So he sits down, and then this reconciliation worker stands up. This is somebody who has made it their business to be about God's business every day. They're doing this really hard work of helping people heal, and he stands up and he says, every morning I wake up and I want to kill a Muzungu, which is like, translate like white person or Western or something like that, right? He's like, every day I wake up and I want to kill somebody, because I'm still so deeply hurt that when we cried out for help and everyone was silent, right? Like we asked for help and we didn't get it. And so here I am day after day, like trying to care for people and make this repair, but like I'm still holding on to this very concrete hurt of asking for help and not receiving it. And so he said, you know, thank you for coming here today and for saying that. It brings healing to my heart. Right? And so in that moment, I was like, oh, this is why we're here. Like, how did we get here and whatever? I'm like, this is it. This is absolutely why we are here. And it just was so apparent to me that, you know, Jason was there to deliver this message that would soothe the hurting heart of this beautiful man who had made God's business his day job, right? But even though he was literally spending every single day facilitating reconciliation between his neighbors, he was carrying a heavy weight that he was unable to set down. And he really did need somebody in 3D, right? Some real hands and feet to come to him and to say, like, I see you. And you're angry about a real thing and it's valid. And you can set it down now, right? So that was a pretty incredible moment. And it leads me to our next questions. How can we make space in our lives to let ourselves be appropriately affected by the grief of others? That one's hard. The second one's harder. How can we let God show us how our lives and our living are interconnected with the pain of others? Have you been in any of those conversations? They're hard. They're hard, right? And I think when we see questions like this, I don't know how this lands for you, but I know there. I can imagine a worry of like, I don't like that. That feels weird. And if I go there, I just feel like I'm going to just be like sad and smarmy all the time, and just going around like sorry. Because there's a lot that's maybe not going well in the world. But I think what really happens in these situations, or at least what I could see happening in front of me when we were in Rwanda, is that that this was an opportunity for this person who's doing like really amazing work to find healing. It was an opportunity for Jason as a believer to like understand his faith in a deeper way and really show up for somebody. And that was like a faith building experience for him. And in the end, they were able to hug, and we actually have a photo of it. And I promise you, like, I dug through Dropbox to share it with you and actually found half of it. We won't go there, but I was like, that's half of the photo. I'm going to give up. But yeah, so I think we can do this, and it might not, like, our greatest fears about it, it might not be how it turns out. Last time I spoke at East Lake, we were talking about how God's goodness doesn't run out, right? Like, when you're connected to that source of life, that you can choose to be a conduit of the goodness of God, because it's not really your job to like drum up that energy. I think it's the same with hurting people, right? Like, when we're connected to the source of, you know, God's spirit and his care for hurting people, then we could pass that on. Like, we could pass it on, and it's not going to run out, so we don't have to worry. It's not a finite supply. So let's see. I think there is another slide. I got a little distracted. What happens next? Yes. And I do think we have opportunities in our everyday lives to really be with people in joy and in pain, and to bring the generosity of a good father into spaces where the healing of Jesus needs three-dimensional hands and feet. I think that is an invitation for us, and really kind of an exciting one when we choose to lean into it. Romans 12:15 says, "Rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn." And as was the case in the story of Jason in that reconciliation circle in Rwanda, I think that we can, on the next one, we can commit to understanding that to really mourn with those who mourn, we're going to need to be open to hearing about how, in some instances, we are implicated in the circumstances that caused their pain in the first place, right? If we really want to mourn with those who mourn, are we open to that in some circumstances? Not all, of course. I think that it's hard and humble work, but I think that it's worth it. And I think that we'll find the grace to do it if we lean into it. So 2 Corinthians 1:3-4 describes God as the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort that we ourselves have already received from God. He does that for us. So I really hope that you've been on the receiving end of that kind of comfort, right? That someone's let you kind of say out loud something you needed to say and work through it till you're in a place where you could kind of like lift your heart and head up to God again. I hope that's been true for you. I hope you've had the chance to do that for somebody else, because it's a beautiful thing to do. I also hope that you have or will have a chance to stand up and say a public word of responsibility and healing that bridges a divide for someone who's waiting to cross on this road that God has for them. Like, that's an amazing opportunity. And I hope your life presents you with an opportunity like that at some point. So those are big questions. And like I said, I mostly brought us questions this morning, not answers to them, but I just hope it's an invitation for you to kind of sit with this and think about how this lands for you. But in closing, I want to always, always, always remind us that we are people in process, right? So what I'm imagining here isn't kind of like periodic grand gestures, but really think more brushing your teeth, right? Like, how can we become people who develop a practice of saying like, hey, like, God's big enough to hear you out. I'm going to be the ears for that, right? Like, hey, you're hurting. I'm going to sit with you in that. And I'm also going to be open to, if you need to tell me why I might be part of the problem. Like, I think we can do those kinds of things. And there's an invitation in the Word of God for us to do it, and grace there also to give us the strength to do it. But we are people in process. And just to kind of close, so last Sunday, I was actually traveling back from the East Coast. So was there for work. And so I had two flights last Sunday. So Boston to Minneapolis, Minneapolis to Pasco. So I'm on the flight and I'm trying to kind of finish up this talk. I'm so excited to have the chance to speak with you today. And I wanted to make sure I kind of had all my thoughts in order. And so I'm on the laptop. And also, I really like traveling. I think it's fun to travel. And so I had been thinking, I think as the plane was boarding the Boston to Minneapolis, like, man, people could be going anywhere, right? If you had like kind of a infographic of all the spokes and constellations for where all these people on this flight on this are going, and it was a bigger flight. It's like the three across. I was thinking, my husband likes airplanes, so he would say, it's an Airbus, blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, it was a three across was that's the kind of flight I was on, but that's what it was. So I'm on a three across, thinking big thoughts about infographics and where people are going and how exciting the world is. And then now I'm on the next flight, the Minneapolis to Pasco. It's a two across, smaller plane, right? And I'm sitting there and I'm typing and working on this talk with noise canceling earphones on, right? Like, I'm writing a talk called Speak, I'm Listening with noise canceling earphones on. Like, what's happening? Like, there's like hypocrisy, and then you're like, that's hilarious, right? So I was like, okay, this won't do. You know, come on, Anna, you gotta do better. So I take off these noise canceling earphones and I turn to the person next to me. And I think I kind of was still thinking I was Boston to Minneapolis. So I was asking kind of that big, like, exciting travel question. So I was like, hey, like going someplace fun? And then the person next to me turns to me and he's like, Tri-Cities? And I was like, oh, right, we're on the two across. We are all going to the Tri-Cities. It is super fun, but that would have probably been a better question for Boston and Minneapolis. Also, like, this person doesn't want to talk to me. Like, I think I'm increasing their social anxiety. Like, I'm really trying to do the right thing, and it's not the right thing, right? So I was like, oh, okay, cool. I was like, cool, yeah, that's cool. So I put my earphones back on, keep typing. And then I was like, I should probably try again. I should not have. I should not have tried again, but I felt like I should. And so I look out, I was actually kind of looking out the window too, because the clouds were very cool. And I don't know cloud words, but I really love clouds. I think they're awesome. And at one point Jason was studying for his private pilot's license. And so I would like quiz him on cloud words. So I'm semi-interested. So I'm looking out, I'm like, oh, and I can see there's like the fluffy ones, and then they kind of stop because it's a cold front, it's a hot front. Something's happened, a weather thing is happening out the window, and it's cool to look at. So I take off the earphones and I was like, you like clouds? He's like, no. I was like, oh yeah, it's cool. So anyway, we are people in process. This doesn't always work out, but I really do want to kind of set that invitation before you to kind of let God maybe mess with you a little bit this week and expand your definitions of how these things work and what counts. So if you will pray with me, that would be fantastic. Dear God, we thank you for this day. We thank you for the opportunity to be together in this place. I thank you for each person here. I thank you for what you are saying to them and what you might have for them, Lord. And I pray that whatever you have for them, Lord, that it would come packaged with a big, giant hug from you. We love you and we thank you for this day. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks again for listening. If you've got more questions about the church or community group options for connecting with East Lakers outside of Sunday mornings, I'd encourage you to check out our website, eastlaketricities.com, or better yet, download our app by searching East Lake Tri-Cities in your favorite app store.